When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Go. Now, it's the Mike Calta Show.
It is 8:07 on the Mike Calta Show. It's 102.5 The Bone. Tonight at the Capitol Theater, you'll have the opportunity to see our next guest in the studio with us. I said this morning before you weren't even here. I think one of my favorite people that I've met as being on the show. I meet a lot of people, but I don't always like them a lot after they leave. Steve-O is here with us. Yeah, how are you, buddy?
You know I say the same thing about you. I love you.
I do know you do that, and I will tell you, there's very few people who, outside of being on the show, really still act and remember. You know, I watched an interview that you did with Gene Simmons the other day, and you were telling Gene Simmons about Craig Gass. And he obviously was familiar with him, but you even said you were like, I was on a show, on the Mike Calta Show, and very few people do that. They don't go out of their way to give some love. And then when you were on with Jericho, you mentioned us a couple of times. Everybody always, if I don't see it, they report it back to me. So thank you for being a loyal.
You know, that's just muscle memory.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, no, it's good.
And it was a really wild experience. I'll never forget when Craig Gass called in pretending to be Tom Arnold, explaining that he'd relapsed.
Yeah.
God, what a talented guy Craig Gass is.
He's the best at that. Do you believe the story? Do you know why he's good at that? Why he's good at imitating other people?
I don't know.
Because his parents are deaf. And he grew up watching TV, and that's how he learned it. And I don't believe that story at all. I can't. I don't. He's like, I swear to God.
His parents and his sister, I believe. Like, his whole family's deaf. He's the only one, which, by the way, he says about Lars saying, his whole family's retarded. And he's like, they're not retarded, deaf.
Wait, how did he say it?
They're retarded. But he does a great Lars, too. Yeah. And it's so funny.
Yeah. He says that because his family's deaf, he was able to mimic the people on TV because he was talking, hearing the only people he was hearing talking. And I don't know what it is, but his Pacino is unbelievable.
So you're suggesting that he's a liar?
Yes. Something about him makes me think he's lying. Yeah.
Yeah. He tells a story about how we were on, or supposed to be on, the roast of Gene Simmons, and that I was kicked out for peeing on Danny Bonaduce.
I remember that story.
Not true.
Oh, really?
I mean, I peed in a bottle.
Behind Danny Bonaduce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's better to say I peed on him.
Yeah.
But bless his heart. You know what they say? Never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
For sure.
However, do not take that approach. I'm rigorously honest.
Yes. You're honest so to a fault. It's ridiculous. It's the one good thing about you that I love is the honesty, because I think I told you this when you were on the phone with us last time. The last time you were here, my son and I went to go see the show, and we went out there, and you said, hey, tickets were going okay, and then I went on your show, and then we sold a bunch of tickets. I was like, oh, great. You know? So you went out there, and you were like, how many came out here to see because of the Mike Calta Show? And it was like, and you looked at me, and right from the stage, you looked at me and went, that backfired. that's great.
You know, I think there are a lot of questions you can ask a big audience and not get like a really truthful response. Yeah. I genuinely believe that you really moved the needle.
Yeah, people find out that you're here. You know, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious, man. I thought that was great. Steve-O, it's hard not to look at the penis on your tattoo. That's the one. Post Malone put it on your right eye, above your right eyebrow.
How great was it to get on the radio with you beforehand, and I was so stressed out, not that I was going to have a penis tattooed on my forehead, but that I was scared that I might not.
Right. That's true. You were like, I think it's going to happen. I don't know. But can I tell you, though, that I honestly called you up the day. I said, this is a guy I consider a friend. And I'm calling him up, and I'm going to talk him out of doing this. I'm going to be the one voice, and you just shut me down right away. You were like, if I listen to people who told me not, and I went, he's right. He's made a whole career out of doing things that people told him.
You know, I remember when I was living in Florida when Jackass began.
Right.
And living with my sister, and I was working at a flea market circus.
Okay.
So I spent like 2 weeks or so bringing in 50-gallon storage bins.
Right.
To collect the elephant poo. There was a guy whose job was to clean elephant poo, and I said, not one turd leaves this compound. Not one turd. When my 50-gallon tub is full.
Yep.
I will present you with another one.
Okay.
Okay. One turd leaves this compound. I had so much elephant poo and it was just fermenting. It had maggots like just crawling all up in there. And that was one of my first bits on Jackass at my sister's house. I laid out a kiddie pool and we dumped every 50 gallon tub. We had a mountain of elephant poo in this kiddie pool. And I climbed up a 10-foot ladder and did all kinds of terrible acrobatics into the poo.
Oh, man.
And after the bit wrapped, the producers, they said, okay, now we're gonna clean up this elephant poo and stuff. We're gonna get this out of here. And I said, nope. That stays right there because I didn't want to be perceived as inconvenient. I'll deal with that. We're going to go film for a few more days. I said, I'll come back. I'll clean it up. Not your problem. I wanted to be like, have a favorable impression.
Right. Steve-O takes care of his own poop. Yeah.
But we're talking about South Florida.
Yeah.
The weather turns on a dime.
Or it rains. Yeah.
Yeah. And so as soon as we left, it just became a torrential tropical storm, like just rain pelting down. Like my sister's, not only my sister's house was flooded.
Yeah.
It was a poonami. Okay. I mean, it was the neighbor's house. My sister's house was just a swamp of poo.
Oh.
My sister was so mad. When I got back and she was just, and for what? And she says, and for what? Do you really think that putting your body in poo is going to make people like you? Do you really think this is something that's going to help you? And I was like, she made me a little nervous.
Do you constantly bring it up to her now? Remember when you thought the poo?
I would never do that. But it sticks in my mind as an example of like common sense would dictate that it's not like a good look to jump in elephant poop, but it worked out really well
for you. Yeah. If no one's jumped in elephant poop before, then it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Can I ask you? I don't know that I know this or that we talked. You're here in Florida. You're going to Clown College. You did all that stuff. Where is it that you? I know you were skateboarding. Where is it that you meet up with the Jackass guys for the first time?
You know, it was remote. Even back in the day, it was a remote deal. There was this magazine called Big Brother.
Uh-huh.
It was just terrible.
What was it?
It was a skateboarding magazine.
Skateboarding, okay.
But it was really just a forum for filth masquerading as a skateboard magazine.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was, and that's why I loved it so much. It was so terrible, man. I mean, they had they went out of their way to be terrible. Like, did one of the covers, they dressed up a professional skateboarder as the devil with a pitchfork and had him do like skateboard tricks over a legitimate stack of burning Bibles. stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
90s shock jock stuff. Yeah.
Delicious, terrible stuff. I remember like an article, like the journalism was on point, like super sophisticated, clever stuff. But the articles were like how to short circuit an entire house, like at a party, you know, like with just simple, basic aluminum foil. like really terrible, terroristic things. And I just loved the magazine. And when one of their tours came through my town, I was living in Albuquerque at the time, I was just like, I'm getting in this magazine.
Right.
I don't care. And all I had to do was burn the skin off half my face.
Oh.
And I got my article. And
what did you do to burn the skin on your face?
Well, I would spray large amounts of hairspray in my hair to light my hair on fire so that somebody else could use my flaming hair as a fire-breathing torch.
Right, right.
But this time I wanted to make it special, so I had this professional skateboarder blow a fireball off my head, which I reached my hand into after dousing it with flammable liquid. Then my arm would be on fire and my head on fire, and then I would do a simultaneous fire-breathing backflip. But because I wanted to reach my hand into it, I had it come from the side, and the professional skateboarder kind of didn't know what he was doing. He just blew the fireball point-blank into my face. And so my head was, my whole face, my everything from the shoulders up was engulfed in flames, and I thought, I better hurry up and do this fire-breathing backflip quick. You know, and I came up a little bit short, so I landed on my knees. My whole head's on fire, and I'm just flailing through this backyard, like, trying to put it out. By the time I got the fire out, like, all the skin on half of my face was in my hand.
Rolled up
like a Harvey joint.
Dent. That's a real injury.
It was the skin was rolled up like a joint in my hand. And somebody, in the footage, somebody on camera, somebody comes over, and they go, "Dude, are you okay?" And I go, "Nah, not even."
How old are you at the time?
At that time, I would have been 23.
That's so...
I think 23-year-old Steve-O. And I had already hitchhiked from Albuquerque, where I lived, to Denver to audition for Clown College.
Oh, my God.
But I had not yet found out if I was in, if I'd been accepted or not.
Right.
Because it was hard to get into Clown College. It was
that's a real deal school. Yeah.
Statistically harder to get into Clown College than Harvard.
Harvard. Wow.
And so, like, I burned my face off. Like, for the next 2 weeks, I've got all this ooze. Like, just pus coming out of my face.
Yeah.
Like, they scraped it down at the hospital that night. It's called a debriding.
Right.
So, like, to stop the dead skin, the burnt skin will rot and it will get infected. So they have to scrape down to the bottom layer. And it's the most painful thing. So they scrape down to the bottom layer, but still for the next 2 weeks, pus and everything's oozing out. So when I wake up in the morning, I have to quite literally peel my pillow off my face. and they said I couldn't go out in the sun for 6 months. They said that and while I'm in the peel my pillow off my face stage, I get the call from Clown College that I've been accepted. And I'm like, oh man. So like, I go to Clown.
Now, can I ask you a question? What are the requirements to get into Clown College?
Well, they
did you have to audition?
Yeah, you had to audition. Yeah. The circus, there were always, the circus was always in two different places.
Okay.
There was the red unit and the blue unit.
Right.
And they would swap schedules every year so that, like, everybody knew that if they went to the circus, that they could go back to the circus the next year. It would be a totally different show.
Different circus, okay.
And each unit went to 50 cities. So combined, the circus was in 100 cities every year.
Wow.
And they held auditions for Clown College in all 100 cities.
Oh, wow.
And, like, at mine, there was, like, at least 60 people showed up. So, you know, you end up with...
What did you do for your audition?
They said, no, do not show up in clown makeup.
Uh-huh.
They don't want anybody with clown experience. You know, they were very hoity-toity.
Very
elitist about the wanting blank canvases to work with.
Right.
And they had to, they said, okay. The audition began with these two people. They said, don't be nervous about us. We're not important.
Were they in clown makeup?
They were not. Okay. They were not.
Okay.
They said, don't be nervous about us. We're not important. We're just clowns. But this camera we're holding is the eyes and ears of someone who's very important, whose time we're not going to waste. So please line up against the wall one by one. You jump in front of the camera and you say your name and why you want to be a clown. And then you get out of the way. We make this quick. We're not going to waste time here. And so people are like kind of wandering in front of the camera saying, oh, I'm really looking for a big pair of shoes. I'm just like, oh, because I didn't. Now I jump in front of the camera and I say, my name is Steve Glover. I'm an aspiring stuntman from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I just got done hitchhiking all the way from Albuquerque because I don't want to spend the rest of my life wondering if I missed out on the biggest opportunity I ever had.
Wow.
And I did a perfect standing backflip and got out of the way.
Closing out?
Yeah, well, that was just my intro. Then, yeah. And then they did these exercises, which were just impossible. There was I recall the first one. They said, okay, now we're going to do an exercise where there's an imaginary line down the middle of your body.
Okay.
The right half of your body is a lazy cow grazing in a field. And the left half of your body is a wild baboon throwing a temper tantrum. Now, go.
Oh, Jesus.
So, like, that's an impossible feat to perform.
Yeah,
but
you can't be both at the same time.
Right.
You had to figure out how to do that.
Right, but the objective on their end was to weed out the inhibited.
So the people who wouldn't try to be them.
Yeah. It was just people who would just were ready to just go for the impossible. And, you know, and so it was kind of a wild deal. And, and I got in. I healed like Wolverine.
Did
so
you really?
No issue. And that's just how I do. And while I was in Clown College, the first issue of Big Brother with me in it came out.
Oh wow.
And Big Brother also it endeared me to Big Brother the fact that I was a clown. And my little sidebar article was called The Burning Boy Festival. and this is just what Big Brother was all about.
Right.
So I became a regular fixture in Big Brother, and they put out videos as well. So the videos.
Let me ask you this. As a parent, do your parents look at this and like, hey, remember we thought he was crazy? Look what he's doing. He's in his – this was his big deal. He's in the magazine. Like, no, my son's 17, and I'm trying to see
– I remember him
Yeah,
older.
He used to be little. Well, no, he's a big kid, yeah. And I'm watching his path now to see where he goes. He's into underground rap, and he's got a T-shirt line and all that. So part of me is, like, very proud that he's doing all this stuff on his own. And then part of me is, like, very nervous about what's going to happen. But as a parent, it's good to see him doing something and getting it going. Like, at first, I would have been like, we might have a retarded kid.
and then I go, just throw the R word around like, well, it's having
just coincidence today. You know, we might have a kid who's got some issues here. And then all of a sudden, you're in the magazine that you wanted to be in.
Okay.
And you're doing it.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
my dad was a very successful corporate
businessman,
executive.
Yeah.
You know, working for multinational corporations. And I dropped out of college, not thrilled about that. My dad was not thrilled.
Sure.
And I was raised with enough pride that when I was like sort of meandering around after dropping out of college, homeless for 3 years,
uh-huh.
I had too much pride to ask him for help.
To
so
go
I
home.
Just kind of found my way.
Right.
Following the Grateful Dead and selling drugs. Having the government test drugs on me for money was a good source of income.
my thing is always, as a father, less than zero. The movie with Less Than Zero,
right.
Robert Downey Jr.,
where
Robert Downey goes to his father on the tennis court and says, I need help. And he says, I can't help you anymore. I can't. That's my worst, worst nightmare as a father. But, I mean, you know, if drugs aren't involved, or if he's not, you know, into somebody else for the money, if he's just trying to find his way, I found my way.
Years after the fact, I said, Dad, I didn't have anything that I was doing which warranted you being proud of me. Not one damn little thing.
Right.
Like, it's not like I just couldn't. I didn't have it in me to. I couldn't come to you and ask you to bankroll me doing nothing that you were in approval of.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't ask you for money
to set myself
like,
on fire.
I said you weren't going to give me money to do stuff that. He said you never gave me the chance.
Huh.
You know,
I mean, what if you had gone to him? How did he feel about Clown College?
He wasn't into it. He thought Clown College was at my. He was not at my gala graduation ceremony.
See, I think
he lived in England.
But as a parent, you have to go. Okay, well, it's not my route, but he found his route.
Right,
and
now,
support
to
that.
His credit. To his credit, the Clown College was 1997, 1998. He took it upon himself to initiate a conversation with me where he said exactly that. He said, you clearly haven't chosen a path that I would have picked for you.
Right.
But now I know that you're really genuinely committed to it. And that being the case, I just want you to be as good at it as you can.
Well, that's good. I think that's
good. He said
the
same thing with his dad. His dad didn't want him to be a businessman. His dad was all academic, theology, clergyman.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the whole thing.
You can't try to live your life through your kids. It's never going to work out that way.
Yeah.
Question, in 2024, who is worth more money, you or your father?
Ooh, that's a mean question. He's on my payroll.
Oh, is he handling your finances?
I took him out of retirement.
That's great.
It's satisfying to say. I feel like I'm blushing, and I would be mortified if my dad heard me say that in that context.
But I get it. But that, I mean, to you, that's got to be such a great feeling. Not kind of like shoving your face, but look, I did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's zero. I did it. I'll show you. And when I had little stuff in Big Brother magazine, they weren't paying me. I had not made a dime.
That's a personal conquest. You know, it's something you love so much, and then all of a sudden they'd be featuring like.
Dude, you want to know about the personal conquest? And apologies if you've heard.
No,
this.
Please tell me.
I was such a fan of Motley Crue when I was a kid.
So yes, tell this story because I don't know if enough people heard this. This is a great story.
And my dad at the time, we lived in Canada, uh-huh. Living in Toronto. My dad was, I believe, the president of Nabisco Canada.
Okay.
Motley Crue's coming on Girls, Girls, Girls tour. The year is 1987.
Okay.
And Nabisco Canada has, I believe, multiple skyboxes.
In the arena.
These luxury suites in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens where the hockey team plays. Yep. And my dad knows how much I love Motley Crue. Uh-huh. And he knows nobody at Nabisco gives a crap about a Motley Crue concert. So the Nabisco skyboxes are going to be empty. Dad comes to me and he says, son, I'm going to do you a solid. He says, Motley Crue's coming. He says, I'm going to take you. I got the Nabisco skybox for us to enjoy the Motley Crue concert. And I say, "Daw, Dad, watching Motley Crue through a plate glass window sucks." And he says, "All right, well, if you can get better tickets, then by all means, go for it." I didn't have a plan at the time.
Yeah.
But the day before the concert, I see on the news that they're just outraged. These jerks, these rock stars coming to our city, they behave like this, whatever it was, they set a hotel room on fire.
They're being
Motley Crue. And they're in our town. There's just this piece on the news about these terrible people coming to the town. And the concert's the next day. So I'm thinking, the concert's the next day. It's tomorrow. Right. And they're here now.
Yeah.
So they're in a hotel.
Oh, it's an opportunity.
I just know it. They're in a hotel. And I got to find them. And I'm such a diehard Motley Crue fan. They're all over my walls. I know that Nikki Sixx's real name isn't really Nikki Sixx.
Oh, you knew.
Frank Carlton Ferrano.
Right.
You know, like, I know Vince Neil, his real name, Vincent Wharton.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, I know all this stuff. Yeah.
That's epic. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, like, not going to check into a hotel as Nikki Sixx.
Right.
But probably not going to check in as Frank Carlton Ferrano.
Right.
You know, like.
Too many people like you know that.
So I thought, you know what? The manager. And meanwhile, I'm 13 years old. I go run into my room, pull out my tape cassettes, and every single one to look at manager. It says Doc McGee.
Doc McGee, yeah.
Doc McGee. And so I'm like, I'm there in a hotel under the name Doc McGee. And I go run into the kitchen and I pull out the yellow pages.
Look up
and,
the hotel.
And I just go to hotel. And I'm not cherry picking. Like, oh, they're going to be in a nice one. No.
You just went through everyone?
I start
everyone.
To the top of the list. Ooh. A.
Triple A hotel. Yeah.
And I literally, and it's 1987. They didn't even have call waiting yet. So my mom's pissed because I'm tying up the house phone. The concert was October 25th, but this is the day before.
Right.
You know,
this is 13-year-old Steve-O.
And October 25th was a Sunday, so this is Saturday. My dad's watching college football.
Right.
My mom's in the kitchen. I'm sitting there calling hotel after hotel. And when the hotel picks up, I say, hello, please put me through to Doc McGee's room, please.
Uh-huh.
My mom's just pissed because I'm tying up the house line.
She's hearing you say that 1,000 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Doc McGee, please.
Annoying. And she's like, you gotta knock this off. And I said, Mom, I'm calling Motley Crue. Right? Now, my dad, sitting there kind of like noticing what's going on, he's watching college football. All he's ever wanted, and you could probably relate to this, all he's ever wanted was to see that spark, just to see some enthusiasm, just to see to see me on fire for something.
Right, right.
And my dad says, honey, he's calling Motley Crue.
Finally, he's on my side.
He's on my side. And so I sit there for hours. Finally, I'm guessing I'm 2-3 hours into it.
Really?
And there was a false alarm with a different spelling for McGee. You know, but ultimately, I was patched through to a room. And the phone rang. This guy answers. And I say, hello, is that Doc McGee? And the guy says, nah, this is Doc's brother, Scott.
Who is also on tour, yeah.
Yeah, who's this? And I said, as in Motley Crue. Like, I'm just kind of freaking out. Is the crew there?
Right. You know, so
right away, he's annoyed. He's annoyed on the phone. He's like, all right, like, who is this? How'd you get this number? And I said, I just called every hotel in the Yellow Pages. Like I'm looking for the crew. You know? And he says, are you kidding me? Are you serious? That's awesome. How would you like backstage passes?
Shut up. Like, just from talking to Scott McGee.
McGee was just impressed. Yeah. The little kid called every hotel in the Yellow Pages. He put me on the list for backstage passes, tickets in the fifth row. And my dad drove me to the show. We're in this cool media line.
Your dad know now that you made it through and Doc McGee's brother's
with me? 100%, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it was the next day. We're all prepared. Like, we're in line with all these cool, like, you know, they got my pass with my name, an envelope with my name on it. The pass is inside.
That's so good.
Because we come in the media door, everybody's got huge cameras and stuff. Like, I've got, like, my big boom box, which we bring to the skybox so that I can put it next to the speaker and boom the concert. I record the concert. My dad takes photos of me with Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee.
Oh, your dad went backstage, too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I had two backstage passes. Yeah. So I've got, like, pictures from 1987, Tommy Lee and I are both kids.
Yeah.
Like, I'm super prepubescent. It's just a rad story.
Do you get to show them to them now?
Oh, yeah, dude. It became full circle where, you know, they when they got back together in 2004, like, I announced them as being back together, like, at this big event. You know, it's
so
crazy
great.
And full circle. Like, they're like the quotes on my first book, you know, on the cover. Just really rad.
So,
and after that,
yeah.
From that point on, when I was 13, like, every crappy report card, every son, if you could just
put the effort into it as you did the Motley Crue. Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, your life would be so easy if you could just apply yourself.
Yeah.
If you could just show it. Just loomed over me as this annoying curse.
Yeah, that's so true, though.
Like, you've demonstrated that you have.
You have the ability. You have to come, the tenacity.
But you're a loser. Yeah.
So you grew up in not in California, but you grew up around traveling.
Countries.
Yeah. I grew up in New York, and I was a Bon Jovi fan because Slippery and Wet and New Jersey came out while I was in high school. So that was the thing. And I went to see them in June at Giant Stadium, the first time they played Giant Stadium. So 70,000 people,
that?
1989. I'm here. They're there. I still think it's the greatest night of my life, you know, whatever. Fast forward now. I got a couple guys in the band on my phone. I go out to eat with them when they come to town. I'm like, this is the most full circle thing to me ever.
Couple guys in the band on my phone. Go out to eat with them a couple times.
Yeah.
But are those guys cool with Jon Bon Jovi?
Are they cool with him?
Yeah, because wasn't there like some...
So Sambora is the only one that's out, the guitar player.
Okay.
But like David Bryan and I have become acquaintances. I can call him or text him if I had to. Tico Torres, we've gone out to dinner with him a couple times where he knows we recognize each other. You know what I mean? That to me blows my mind. John is above everything. So I've met John and hung out with John a couple of times. I don't really think he knows who I am.
He's above everything.
He's above everything.
He's the boss.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they were the nicest guys, and it was just one of the most full circles things for me because to me they were like, you know, when I was a kid they were superstars, and now I'm eating dinner with them in Tampa. You know, so it's just it blows my mind that stuff. I love that. I love that story. I love that you calling the hotels and all that. Also, good thing you got Scott McGee and not get Doc, because Doc's a little curmudgeon-y. He's a little, he would have been like, hung up on you. You know?
Apparently, Scott McGee today is Neighbors with Kid Rock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So imagine that means Scott's doing pretty
Scott's
well
doing all right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Holy cow. This is Steve-O in the studio with us.
Check it out, dude.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the pictures of me and Nikki Six and Tommy Lee brought up
on Bone TV, yeah.
Yep. Man, it's so crazy that you can just sit here and talk for this long with no music, no commercials.
Well, we do play commercials, but we are thankfully this company allows us to manipulate them within the 4 hours so that as long as they all get played, we're okay. So it doesn't have to interrupt what we're doing.
I know. And, dude, it's, like, unbelievable in this day and age of radio.
I don't know.
Like, talking is kind of, like, taboo in radio.
Yeah, I don't get it because if it's the last thing I'm listening to the radio for is music. I know what I want to listen. If I want to listen to Motley Crue today, I'm listening on Spotify. And if I want to go from Motley Crue to Yacht Rock right after it, I can do that. I don't have to sit listening to 9 songs I don't care about.
Yeah,
it's really weird. And so the last thing I'm listening to for music is there. But for talk, it's just another outlet for you to get talk. You're getting it on Spotify. You're getting it on YouTube. You're getting whatever podcast. We're just another outlet. So when people are like, we always talk about how, you know, first time we met, you thought radio was dying. And I'm like,
right.
In essence, some of it is. But the good ones are still hanging around.
Radio's
so.
Like Los Angeles.
It's either really good or really bad. Most people in radio are doing it as they're leaving radio and, after it's done and going to work at a furniture store. Like not paying their bills anymore. They're doing it for the love of being here or the coolness factor. You know, I am 52 years old. This is it for me. If radio died tomorrow, I'd be like, well, it was a good run. I've been doing it for 30-something years. I'm done now, so I don't care. You know what I mean? I still get up every day. I still get a fat paycheck. I still get, you know.
Dude, and you're in your house.
This is the best
thing ever. Worth noting, this is my first time.
I couldn't remember if you came in. Yeah, I said, Steve-O been here before? I can't remember.
I thought he had, but I guess not.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, I remember the building so well. I really do.
We should have you go wake my son up.
Get in bed with him.
Hit him in the head with your nuts. Shaq was supposed to come in one day, and Joey, my son, was going to school. He was still in school at the time, and I thought we should do a thing where every celebrity comes in and has to go wake my son up. Can you imagine being sleeping and open your eyes? Hey, little buddy, time to wake up. That would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
It's important to remind everybody, Steve-O is in town. He's at a show tonight at the Capitol Theater. I went to the show last time. I loved it. I watched the whole thing. I stayed for the whole thing. I laughed. Do you know how hard it is for me to do something during the week and then get up at 5 o'clock in the morning the next day at my old age? But it was worth every second of it, man. It really is a great show.
Well, thank you. It's a totally new show this time around.
Oh, really? Yeah. So there's new stuff too. So have you saw it before?
Yeah, it's a 100% new show. I've been, like, I booked this I'm going to drop a nuclear bomb on you now.
Okay.
Right.
This is a man with a tattooed penis on his eye is now going to give me a nuclear bomb on top of that. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that you don't know about this already.
Maybe I do, and you don't know that I know.
Okay. The name of my next tour is Steve-O's Gone Too Far.
Okay.
And I got it in my head a good 4 years ago. That's what I'm gonna do, and that part of it is gonna involve me getting a boob job.
Yes, we did talk about that the last time we talked.
The biggest boobs that I can possibly have surgically implanted
will be what?
Will they, like, confirmed?
Did they look at your body and say you can get
confirmed D cup?
D, you can go D.
I can go D cup. I'm now 52, so yeah, a 50-year-old man can actually fit more than a younger man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's very clearly a nuclear idea, and I believe in it so thoroughly.
Yeah,
I'm not going to live out the rest of my years with D size.
How long do you plan on holding them for?
2 months. 2 months.
I don't know if that's worth it. You might have to go a little longer.
I might end up.
2 months isn't even allowed to, like, you can't even take them on tour at that point.
They haven't settled yet.
There will be a run where the boobs are in place.
Okay.
I came up with 2 months because somebody put it in my head that more than 2 months and the stretching might get a little bit more unmanageable.
Right.
But the actual boob doctor, who I've now consulted with in person, isn't even worried about it. He's like,
he's
kidding me? Yeah. Like, maybe perhaps it's because I'm doing under the muscle.
Okay, you're going, oh, you're really doing it, right?
Yeah. I'm really doing it. Now, like, I don't want to pour the act out, you know, but like, but candidly, this run of shows I'm calling it an interim show, like where I'm exploring historically what has absolutely crossed the line, like with Jackass and, you know, like things that were filmed for Jackass, which absolutely could not be shown. And powers that be like want to scrub it from existence. I have it.
You have it.
And
okay.
I'm going to show it.
Can you give us any examples or would you rather not?
I
don't want to ruin anything.
Yeah, I'd rather not. Okay. But there's a whole bunch of stuff that I've already done for the new tour. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm not even supposed to have that I'm going to peel back the curtain and show. I'm going to explore where the line is, and I'm going to explain why, in some cases, I am proud to have crossed the line, and I'm going to come clean and explain how I'm sorely, sorely apologetic, remorseful, and like really upset for the rest of my life over other situations.
Wow. Okay. All right.
So yeah, it's
are you worried anything's going to get you canceled?
That's why I'm on this. That's why I'm on this run. I'm literally like,
get it going now.
I'm really just I'm putting the feelers out there. Yeah, that what am I doing? Like when I started this run of shows, it was actually in my head that like that I'm looking for the indicators that if I should back out, should pull the ripcord and not go through with it. And I've been very nervous starting this run of shows that the horrifying things that I'm bringing to the audience, that it's just too much and that I'm just going to watch it like just bum people out.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe how resilient my people are. Like, I'm really like the boost of confidence that I've gotten from presenting the most horrifying aspects of my career and of the franchise, like people can handle it. And with the tits, like I'm walking through the pros and cons as I see them. I'm relating the dire, urgent pleas to get me to stop, like the threats, the stakes.
I am more for the breast than I was for the tattoo.
Wow, that's crazy, dude. People take different positions.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I feel like you're at an age now and in a position where we all probably thought you'd be dead at a certain point.
For sure.
You were in bad shape, and now you're sober. You're happy. You got a girl. You got goats. Everything's going great. Don't get a tattoo on your face. But then again, you're Steve-O, and you always will be, so I could deal with it. But the boobs are moving you into a different category. Nobody's done this, and you're a celebrity on top of this. Like you are a television celebrity.
Technically, somebody has done it.
Right,
there's a guy who like lost a bed.
I remember that guy. Yeah,
but he did nothing funny with it.
No, and we tried so hard. I remember it was 1996 or 1997. We tried so hard. I was dealing with Maxim magazine and this guy's people on getting him to go on a radio station tour for it was Clear Channel at the time. We'd bring him in, we'd have him do show, and they wanted nothing to do. I mean, this guy was looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he turned it down. So yeah, he was away. It was away. He settled his bet, and that was it.
He wanted nothing to do it, or the radio stations wanted.
No, he wanted nothing to do with it because the radio station was ready to shell out thousands of dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars to him to do this tour. And he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do it. He got him, fulfilled his bet, and took him out.
I remember hearing that the story was that after the bet was fulfilled, that he kept him.
Oh,
he got a kick out of it.
I don't know. I didn't follow up, but I know that he did enjoy. He was surprised by the response.
No part of me is looking forward to actually having. Like I'm.
You
not,
don't
like,
think that your girl will enjoy? I know she doesn't want you to do it. But you don't think that making sweet love to Steve-O might not have just maybe gotten a little bit more fun?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I just genuinely believe in the production schedule. You know, like the ideas are there.
Yeah, the ideas are
there. I don't want to.
That's a great line. I believe in the production schedule.
I don't want to like spill everything out.
Yeah.
Like you just got to come to the
you
show.
You did promise me on the phone.
I will tell you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
To you.
That's all right. Yeah. What do you got?
Second.
It's all right. I'm used to it.
I really, my conversational etiquette, my...
We're both hosts. It's hard to do that.
Yeah. I will tell you that I've been taking pole dancing lessons for my hidden camera strip club performances. And I'm already really good.
Like, that's funny. Dude,
the ideas are there. The ideas are there. The stakes are high.
Would like, you ha- will you have a separate name?
All right, everybody, clap your hands. He's gonna not want to say Steve-O at first.
Right. I mean, I'm saying, yeah. Please step up for Stephanie.
I don't know if I'm going to make it into the champagne room. It would be wrong if I didn't.
You get a couple of crazy oil tycoons and they want some money? I mean, you said that I could motorboat you.
100%.
I will totally do it.
Oh, so, dude, did I tell you about this on the last time?
We mentioned that you were going to do it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow, how about that?
Yeah.
You know what? When I'm in California or even Tennessee waking up.
Yeah, no, I get it. Trust me. I don't remember anything we did on yesterday's show, so it's right, cool. Right. No, but I'm motorboating it. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it. I love that you're in support of it.
You really changed my mind in the conversation we had last time. I sat in bed the night before and I said, I'm talking him out of it tomorrow. I'm talking him out of the penis tattoo. He's too far gone for this.
Dude, Post Malone's not a real tattoo artist.
No kidding.
And by no means was this the plan. Like, I was ready for it to be a terrible penis. I think he did a reasonably good job, but he had a very light hand. I mean, it's classy.
It's classy. That's what I thought when you walked in.
And if and when I elect to get it lasered off, which is the plan.
Right.
The whole point is just to see how long I last with it in there.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun when I take photos with fans at this point and I say, let me give you my good side.
Yeah. I am looking forward to taking a photo with you so that I can have it on there. I think I told you this last time. I found a picture of the first time we ever met, which we talked about was at the WWE show where you were trapped now. And you look so much like a kid. We both look like kids.
It's
got to be 25 years ago.
I think it was 2007 specifically.
Maybe, because my son wasn't with me. So he either had to be too young to go, or I was with my father and my sister at the wrestling event. So my son was either too little of a baby to go or just born. So he's
18 now. And I got sober in 2008. I was at the pinnacle of being in my disease.
Wow.
And as such, I think that even though it was approaching 20 years ago, I gotta believe I look better 50.
100%.
Yeah.
Your head is shaved, like you have a short hair, and your eyes are from another planet. You're like, I'll text it to you if I find it again.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I appreciate you getting up early and coming in. I love that your people said they advanced some information and said, please be aware, Steve-O will not be doing any stunts on the show. He said, yeah, we're good.
Oh, wow, that's crazy, man.
Like, well, I bet every Yahoo show you do is like, stick this in your nipple. You know?
Yeah, I wonder, I'm not sure that, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I necessarily even like it. It seems to say, if I were you reading that, I would kind of see it saying, please be aware, Steve-O is uptight, doesn't want anything to do with you, and like will be annoyed and like hard to deal with.
I hear Steve-O has been asked by so many dumbass radio stations to do stupid stuff that he's not doing that anymore.
Right, but when you're the dumbass who's inclined to ask, you're like, oh, he's an annoying, uptight.
You know? I'm also the guy that goes, oh, so no stunts? Okay, cool. We won't ask him to do anything. And then you get here, we're like, tase your nipples.
Right. Okay, I think I might want to just ask about what is it that we're sending out?
No, I just said that. I actually think that's a good idea. Okay. So that, you know, you
that way you're not getting hit by every station van whenever you go to some radio station.
It's interesting because you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Do you go on shows when you were in LA? Do you like frequently? Like, were there? There's only a couple of shows
Kevin
I know
and
of.
Bean.
Who?
Kevin and Bean.
Kevin and Bean. Yeah.
On K Rock, it was always my But then Bean retired, as I understand, and Kevin got. Left the show. I think maybe went to a competing radio station. Still in the mix.
Still there, yeah.
But I'm not really sure.
There's the Woody show or the guys in LA that I like. I met those guys before. They do a good show. And then, of course, Kevin and Bean. And then, but other than that, I don't even know who's on the radio anymore.
You know the Rizzuto show in St. Louis?
I know of the name. I don't know the show.
Rizzuto show in St. Louis is a great team. And they're very, very thriving. I mean, I've gone to St. Louis with, like, a pretty bad situation, like, on the ticket scale front, the ticket sales.
Right.
And go on the Rizzuto show and boom, problem solved.
Good, yeah.
Like, that's the only way that I can.
Do you know, though, as an artist, that it's not you that's not selling tickets? It's the fact that there's not enough information out there. There's who's not doing advertising for it, who's not telling.
That's kind, but no, you never going to tell an artist.
But you'll see the jump. You'll see the jump after you've done the media, you know what I mean?
I'm just so sensitive, and I don't think that that's, like, you know, I think that what it is in the artist, in the comic, like, the very dynamic which makes the comedian compelled to get on stage and be like, please love me, love me, like I'm not okay, and I need to be on stage, like, you know, for you to make me believe that I'm okay.
Right.
Like, that's a sensitive, defective person.
I'm missing that. I am on stage, like, if I do a live show, I'm there for one reason. Give me that money. That's the only reason. I don't need to be loved. I don't even care if you like me. It's just, let's do this deal. I want them to have a good time. But I'm doing it for the money side of it.
I'll make no mistake, man. I'm just an attention whore. Yeah. I need to be loved. and I care so much. I genuinely care so much about putting on a good show, man.
Oh, man. Well, good.
And this run, it's been an exercise in workshopping material, in presenting horrific stuff, and I started out like really nervous about it, and in just, you know, this run, like, up to this point, I'm really confident getting
good
on stage.
Good.
I'm really, like, it's coming together, and man, is it fun. So
I wish I could go tonight. I can't go because I got, first of all, it's late for me. But also, I got the debates tonight that I have to watch because we got to talk about that tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
I mean, dude,
in a sense, there's a lot of jackassery going on tonight on stages.
It's tonight.
It is tonight, wow. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
This is the weirdest point in all the years I've been alive. So, I can't wait to see what happens next.
I got to believe that I will be very interested in everybody's take on it after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably rather wake up early and hear your take on it than actually suffer through the debate itself. So I don't really think that I see the debate as competition for my show.
No, I don't think it's competition. Yeah.
And dude, like, everybody, we will see you at the Capitol
Theater tonight. You can get tickets at RuthEckardHall.com, Ticketmaster, wherever you get tickets, and I promise you, you'll have a great time at the show.
It's rigorous honesty. It's show and tell. I'm going to tell you the most implausible things that you would never believe they were true if I weren't about to provide the receipts.
That's what's so
fun about the multimedia.
You get to see the videos and all that stuff.
I'm not like shutting down the show like last time where it's like, okay, now I'm going to leave the stage. We're going to live in this video. Now I just got the
clicker.
I got the clicker.
Yeah.
So boom, yep, proof. Yeah, there's your receipt for this. Boom.
I never thought I'd see the inside of your penis, but I did watch the vasectomy video when I was there, and it was something else, man.
Yeah.
That was really, I was like, this isn't going to bother.
The bar is high.
Yeah.
And man, I love Florida. I love you, man. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming in early. I appreciate you getting up and coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
and congrats on being at the point where you don't have to leave your house. Dude, like Howard Stern, you genuinely, like, have reverence for Howard.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Always have. And here, in so many ways, like, you're just...
Just 90 million less. So close. But, yes. Yeah, no, this has been I'm the only one that in America that loved COVID. Once COVID happened, everything.
I loved it.
You loved it too?
Yeah, it was great.
Didn't have to leave the house for anything. everybody stayed home. We were always together. My family was always here. We can go in the pool whenever we wanted to, hang out, and I could just come in this room for work. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I didn't know that I was going to love it.
Right.
But I'm just like, I would never have given myself a break. I'm not inclined to ever give myself a break. And I needed a break.
Yeah.
And so it forced me to kind of slow down, take a breath, and reevaluate, and I just adapted and diversified in ways that benefited me greatly.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I started a podcast.
Sure.
I realized that because I had the connection here at the radio station, a riot broke out. I was able to hop on the air and talk through the riot, interview the sheriff and all, because I had this facility. I was like, this is the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. And like during the pandemic, so many relationships fell apart because a lot of partners
stuck with each other.
Didn't like their significant other. People are like, oh, wait a second, now I gotta be with my significant other like
24
like,
hours
all
a
the
day,
time
yeah.
And I don't actually like this person. So it tested relationships, and I was just so thrilled that my relationship really stood the test.
Sure,
like
yeah.
we loved it. The more time we spent together, the stronger we
exactly
got.
So, hey, yeah, here's to COVID, everybody.
Yeah, COVID was cool, man. And with the stimulus money just flowing, and everybody had expendable income to burn, it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, let's make some new T-shirts.
I was destroying it with the selling merch, and I even went a little overboard with it, you know?
Oh, that's so funny. But I'll tell you the best takeaway I took from the whole show today that really makes me happy. Is in a good way, not in a gotcha way, is that your father is on your payroll. I love that. I just think that's a great. I can't wait till there's a time when my son was like, remember when you used to be rich? You know, I'm looking forward to that.
I don't want to.
It's a good thing. You keep it.
I want to handle it the right way, but I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Steve-O tonight at the Capitol Theater. We got to take a break. It's the Mike Caldas Show. This is,
Steve-O.com.
Steve-O.com for all your information, videos.
And if anybody has any doubts about what my unique show-and-tell multimedia approach to comedy is, right at the top of Steve-O.com, streaming 100% for free, is my last XXX-rated multimedia special. The one that you saw, bucket list.
Will you bring the boobs here when you have them in?
Will I bring, okay, I'm going to just blurt this out.
All right.
They're going to the Sturgis Motorcycle
Rally. Oh, that's going to be so weird.
And that's where the next run's going to start.
The Steve-O gang rape will be happening in Sturgis. Oh, good luck with that. All right. We'll take sloppy 30ths.
The ideas are there.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Sweet Jesus. Thank you, brother. We'll take a quick break. It's the Mike Caldas Show. It's 102.5 The Bone.
You're listening to the Mike Caldas Show. Now, a Bone traffic update from the Farrah & Farrah Personal Injury Attorneys Traffic Center.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.